I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome back to Radio Times. Last week, City Controller Alan Butkovitz released a damning report about 13 charter schools in Philadelphia. One school was operating a nightclub on the weekends. One business manager was triple-dipping, getting salaries from three different charters. The controller's office also found highly suspect leasing arrangements, numerous examples of conflicts of interest, rubber stamp boards, and high salaries for CEOs. Well, these are serious and troubling findings. The report was even more critical of the school district's charter school office. It said that it provided only minimal oversight of these schools, which creates the opportunity for fraud, waste, and abuse. Alan Butkovitz joins us today on Radio Times. He's been the city's controller, city controller since 2005. And later in the hour, we'll hear from Dr. Arlene Ackerman, superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia, and also Guy Shiraki. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Charter Schools. Alan Butkovitz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. This report looks at 13 out of the 63 schools here in Philadelphia, but your report also says that for 51 of these schools, there was little or no information in the files, meaning you would open a file and find a few pieces of paper?
Right. And hardly any of the files contain copies of the independent audits that the schools are required to get from their own CPAs every year. Often that would be a first line of defense, and auditors would be expected to flag a number of the kinds of issues that arose in our review.
Now, you focus on 13. Why these particular 13?
Well, our fraud unit did a paper evaluation. First of all, this was not an audit. We didn't have the power to audit the charter schools. We had the authority to audit the school district's monitoring of the charter schools. So a lot of this information had to be put together from public records. And on the first cut of the review of public records, there were a number of issues on the checklist that originated with the inquirer's work with regard to Philadelphia Academy Charter School.
Which goes back a couple of years.
Right, showing multiple employment, showing the kinds of close interrelationships and self-dealing that had resulted in federal indictments in that case. And that was the criteria that was used to focus in on these schools.
And what you found, and we'll get into some detail, conflicts of interest, nepotism, questionable hiring, questionable leasing practices, inferior record keeping. Does that sort of cover the gamut when we're looking at these 13
schools?
That's
right, yes.
And you know, I don't know exactly where to start, but let's start with Rhonda Sharif.
Right. Well, in her case, as a result of the Philadelphia Academy Charter School case, the state legislature actually changed the law in 2008 and said that it's now clearly illegal to hold a high-level business management position in more than one charter school. And not only can't you hold two jobs like that, you can't hold a job in one charter school like that and have a contract with another charter school, because that was one of the central findings in the Philadelphia Academy case. Well, before 2008, Ms. Sharif actually had the same position, the equivalent position, in three separate charter schools and was earning as much as $183,000 a year, with one of the salaries being $38,000. It's not as if there was a decision that her function merited $180,000. They were small salaries strung together to big numbers. After 2008, and after this was clearly prohibited by the legislature, she continued to have this employment relationship with one of the charter schools and a contract with the other. At the same time,
in violation.
Right. At the same time, she was accumulating pension credits with the state to the tune of almost 600 days a year, which is the length of a year on Mars. But on Earth, it's 365 days. It's impossible to accumulate 600 days. So there were about 600 days for 2 years and about 460 days for another year. Her husband was awarded $7.5 million. Her husband's construction company was awarded $7.5 million in maintenance and construction contracts by the schools that she was associated with. And I suppose their argument will be that that was done by the boards, but there is a federal IRS requirement that is supposed to make those kinds of transactions transparent. And specifically, there's a question on the 990 return that asks if there's a marital relationship between a chief or high-level management executive and with contractors who are being paid. At one time, the threshold was $50,000 a year. Now it's $100,000 a year. So clearly the $7.5 million exceeded that threshold, and that question was not answered or was answered no for two of the years.
Well, let me just stop you there, because what you also found was that the school district's charter school office had almost no contact, or maybe even no contact, with the various boards of these charter schools.
Right. I mean, one of the issues is that these are volunteer boards of trustees, and theoretically, in the law, the boards are running the schools. But in reality, the chief executive is running the school. And the question is, who is keeping an eye on the foxes?
Foxes being the CEOs?
Yeah. I mean, the whole concept of the charter schools has been that private business can do better than the public in many functions, and therefore in education as well. And many of these charter schools have had exemplary records in terms of academic performance and programming. And there are a number of, basically what these schools do is they contract with educational companies that market their product. So then the issue becomes, how much freedom do the schools have to operate in a business-like function? And the charter advocates have argued for maximum freedom. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have, just like you did on Wall Street, you have a maximum freedom for the private market to function. There still is a role for regulation, because there will always be people in a free environment who will find a way to take advantage of the system. And what the free market also does is maximize profit, which is not what you're supposed to be doing with tax dollars. It's one thing if you create a private school and you develop a product that attracts enough customers and you're able to control costs and expenses in such a way that you maximize your profitability, and then you say you're entitled to higher compensation. Even in that case, it would have to be approved by an independent board of directors. It's something else when you jump to that conclusion that because you have good test scores, you're entitled to make $100,000, $150,000 plus for being the chief of one school, and you don't have to go get the paying customers because you get the state of Pennsylvania to send you a check for thousands of dollars per student.
In fact, you say, looking at the CEO salaries, that they are way out of whack when you compare them to, for instance, public school administrators or even principals.
Right. Average charter school chief was making $115,000 a year, which is about $10,000 more than the average Philadelphia school principal. And the highest paid chief executives were at $175,000, which is higher than deputy superintendents in Philadelphia, who were making $133,000.
Responsible for a lot more students, obviously.
Right. Now, I've seen the counter argument coming from the charters that, well, our people have to function in business. And I'm taking issue with that. They don't have to function in business the way private companies do.
Let me ask you about, I guess this is one of the findings that got the biggest reaction, which was that Harambe Institute in West Philadelphia was actually running a nightclub on the weekends.
Right. It was their affiliated organization, Harambe, I think it's called Harambe Inc. There's the Harambe Charter School, and there's just Harambe. And Harambe was running a nightclub in that school. And it becomes a metaphor for kind of breakdown of control of the schools, which is, I think, one of the reasons it was so eye-catching throughout the country. Everybody's heard that story about the Philadelphia school now that has a bar in the lunchroom.
Well, and not anymore, right?
No, they closed within 7 days.
Well, let me read a letter that I saw from the CEO of Harambe Institute in response to this, and he wrote, "Finally, both in this city and throughout the country, the concept has been floated, if not broadly implemented, that urban schools should have hours extended to more engage and serve the surrounding community. It sounds as if Harambe, to some degree, has been doing this, the idea that a school could have a nightclub on the weekends, or at least an institution could have a nightclub on the weekend and make money aside from educating students."
Yeah, but it's clearly a crazy idea. I mean, Superintendent Ackerman is to be congratulated for quickly jumping on that and saying they were going to have to make a choice in that building between having the school, which pays them hundreds of thousands of dollars rent per year, or having the nightclub. And this is being spun by some people as if this this nightclub was being run for the benefit of the students. There's no accounting, no indication that any of that stream of money went in to support the students. And in fact, we've gotten complaints from parents saying that their children couldn't get appropriate meals because a large part of the lunchroom is occupied permanently by the nightclub and by things that they had stored, presumably liquor as well, for the nightclub. The physical facility is one of the factors taken into consideration and given in creating the charter school. Children should have appropriate lunches. The point of the charter school is to serve the students. Mm. It's not as if they rented a space in some convention center or some shopping center in which there happened to be a pre-existing bar or nightclub two doors down. And it's one of the major factors that the Liquor Control Board uses in awarding liquor licenses. It's written right in the state law that there is a basis for denying a liquor license if it's within 300 feet of a school. Well, this wasn't within 300 feet of a school. This is one of those metaphysical physics questions. This was inside a school. And at one time, there were representations that this was actually separated physically from the building, which is not true. It's the school cafeteria, and there are classes feet away from this location. Then the argument was that it occurred on it didn't occur on school nights. Neighbors were very vehement about, and there were physical inspections of the area showing discarded debris from illegal drugs and discarded beer bottles. So the entire environment. There were signs in the window advertising this club. There are so many things wrong with this, you wouldn't know where to begin. But one of the things that you're supposed to do is be setting an example. These are elementary school children. What kind of example is it to say that this is a normal, what you should expect this? You should expect to live in a bar environment. Obviously, it was extremely embarrassing to some of the charter advocates in the state, who have very, very strong support in central Pennsylvania and whose constituents were not amused to see that the breadth and the liberality of the law had been interpreted to the extent that people felt justified putting a bar or a nightclub in a school.
And we're almost up in a break here. Has any other district taken such a hard look at charter schools?
No.
That you know of across the country?
No, I don't think in the country, no.
And the reason for that is, do you see this as the beginning of a series of investigations looking at charter schools because there's so much more interest in them now?
Well, I think that these things have to get started somewhere, and investigations and reviews tend to be copycat and repetitive. So now that clearly there has been well-documented abuses, it will probably be replicated elsewhere. But I think in many parts of the country, people are shocked at some of these findings and never would have imagined that these kinds of things would be done. Nobody thought there'd be a bar in a school.
Indeed. And that's Alan Bukovitz, our guest today on Radio Times, Philadelphia City Controller, talking about a brand new report from the Controller's Office, a scathing look at the Philadelphia School District's oversight of charter schools here in the city of Philadelphia. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. And staying with us, and we'll be talking with Arlene Ackerman after the break.
Benchmark Schools supports WHYY, providing bright, struggling readers ages 6 to 14 with the self-knowledge, advocacy, and academic skills to help them succeed in school and life. Benchmark also offers a 5-week summer camp for children who can benefit from reinforcement of reading and writing skills. The camp combines research-based language arts with a recreation program. Details can be obtained at Visitors Days, May 26th and 27th, and at benchmarkschool.org.
In it together, like it or not.
You know, it's much more sexy to have an extremist screaming. But I can tell you that all of these mothers who've lost children, I don't care what they say to the media, I know what happens to them at night when they go to bed. We all share the same pain.
Speaking of faith from American Public Media, religion, meaning, ideas. Sunday morning at 7 on WHYY.
Christiana Cares Helen F. Graham Cancer Center, a National Cancer Institute selected community cancer center, supports WHYY. The Graham Cancer Center offers a team approach to cancer care, access to clinical trials, and personal care coordinators who guide patients throughout treatment. The Graham Center, a contributor to the National Institutes of Health's Cancer Genome Atlas Project, has expanded its facility on the Christiana Hospital campus in Newark, Delaware. Full details at christianacare.org/cancer.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. There are 63 charter schools in Philadelphia. The city controller's office just did an investigation of 13 charters and found serious problems at all of them. They just issued a report which was also particularly critical of the school district's charter school office responsible for the oversight of these schools. Philadelphia city controller Alan Butkovitz, our guest today on Radio Times. And joining us now is Dr. Arlene Ackerman, and she has been superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia since June 2008. And Dr. Ackerman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be back. Thank you.
You're welcome. And what is your reaction to the criticism from this report of the school district office? The biggest problem involved the school district's charter school office. That's a quote from this report. Your response to that?
Well, I believe that certainly we should have done more. When we came to the district, as you said, in June 2008, one of the first things I did was to hire and set up a new office for charter schools. It was a small staff, and now we have, we believe, adequate staff to provide the proper oversight. Certainly, you know, we have been doing some oversight, but obviously not enough. And moving forward, we are putting in place certain protocols and processes that will ensure that we have proper oversight. For instance, we will be conducting unannounced audits and random assessments of a minimum of 5 to 10% of the charter schools every year, whether they are on cycle for renewal or not. After consulting with our SRC, we will be working with our government relations office to make sure that we have broader powers in terms of oversight, and that we have indeed an opportunity to put in progressive discipline when we don't get the data or we don't get the cooperation from the various charter schools that we do these assessments and unannounced audits.
Well, let me ask you why you think the controller's office was able to do this investigation and the school district's charter school office was unable to do these investigations.
Well, we should have. And, you know, I don't know, you know, I can't say anything other than moving forward, we will, you know, I think at some point my staff may have believed that they were limited in terms of what they could do, when they could push charter schools. You know, there's been lots there's been different opinions about how much the school district can be involved in charter school matters. And I think we need real clarity on this. I think my staff now understands that if they get pushback, that we should contact the controller's office. We, you know, he has the power of his office. We should have that same kind of power. If we come in, we mean to get, you know, the information we need so that we can do our jobs. I don't know that my staff knew that they could or had strategies for how to get information from charter schools. I'd like that, though, to be really clear in the revision of the charter school law.
And let me get Alan Butkovitz back in on our conversation. I'm quoting from your report and also just picking up on what Dr. Ackerman said. In our dealings with the CSO, that's the charter school office of the school district, they repeatedly made the point that charter schools are independent entities and therefore the CSO has very little authority or influence in the way that they operate. From your investigation, you're saying the CSO was unclear about the kind of authority they had to provide oversight of these charter schools?
First of all, I want to commend Superintendent Ackerman again for being very quick to respond both to the problems at Harambee and to this report I know she has been up to her ears in crisis since assuming this position in Philadelphia, and we appreciate the attitude she's taking.
You're welcome.
With regard to the charter school office, we're somewhat more critical on that. And they are, from what I understand, they have viewed themselves in a collaborative venture with the charter schools and have often been involved in interim management decisions, but have either diverted resources or not taken the focus on this question of possible charter revocation and other kinds of regulatory behavior. I mean, they didn't have the independent audits that are provided by the charter schools in the vast majority of files. Now, we also find that there's deficiencies in the way the audits are performed because the accountants take a very limited perspective about the kind of information that needs to be provided by these related entities, and also because of something in the accounting profession, this idea of materiality, which basically, if something affects less than 5% of the value of the whole thing, accountants regard it not to be a material discrepancy. When you're dealing with a budget of $3 million, 5% is 100 and is what, 15?
You're the controller. I'm going to let you do the math.
5% is $15 million. Well, we're talking about we're talking about $150,000, right? So 5%, you could have $150,000 in improper expenditures and they wouldn't rise to the level of being commented on even in the audit. So obviously the traditional mechanism for dealing with this is inadequate to the problem.
But your report calls for, in fact, your office to do audits, an outside auditor to take a look at these schools and how they're spending, allocating money. And I'm looking at Alan Bukovitz and Dr. Ackerman, I'll get you back in on the conversation.
Are you asking me?
I am.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say I agree with you.
Yes, but
that it should be an outside. It's, you know, one of the things that I know that we are preparing to do is to put the outside audits in our intermediary unit as opposed to the charter school office.
Yeah, and
would that fix the problem?
I think it will begin to fix the problem. You know, there's a lot that needs to be clear in the law. But I do believe that, you know, what if the controller was able to do the work that he did, we certainly, can do it also.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there was discussion at Senator Pakola's hearing the other day about possibly moving that function to the Auditor General. I mean, there's always going to be... This is going to be part of the political and governmental process. There are powerful interests that are involved in the charter school movement and associated with specific charters. There are powerful interests that are out to kill the charter school movement. It becomes a political football. And it is a lot to ask of an entity like the school district, which is always in a position of being hurt by slight changes in appropriations, to gore all those oxes. But
at the same time, we're talking about $300 million
right,
that are being spent in Philadelphia on charter schools.
So the question is, who can do it with the least vulnerability? Because I'm sure that the school district is going to be cross-pressured and whipsawed by people who have an agenda, mm-hmm, both pro and anti-charter school. And in an ideal world, the school district could be above that and function with a blindfold and just do it. But in the real world, they've got a heavy agenda in Harrisburg every year before they have to incur major cuts. So then the issue is, are there other people that are less vulnerable to counterattack for that? Because everybody...
And is that you?
It could be in part, but we had pushback as well. When we started getting into the Harrenby situation, we got a lot of pushback on the bar issue. It was only because of the cascade of other information that backed off. If it goes to the Auditor General, he would be faced with the same. I mean, eventually somebody will have to pull the trigger and say, I'm going to take the pushback. And probably that needs to be in several places as a kind of a fail-safe.
And hold on one second. Just to make sure our listeners understand, you're talking about legislators, powerful people in Pennsylvania that are associated with charter schools and the charter school movement, Alan Bukovitz, right?
Well, I mean, there are powerful legislators that associate with that movement, and there are powerful unions and forces that are out to kill that movement. So the charter schools are right in the crosshairs of a very big political debate, both in the state and in the country. And that's why we've tried to be very careful at making distinctions here, because I don't want our report to be the bullet that kills charter schools. I think that many of them are doing a very good job, but they are not above accountability for public money. And the question is, how do you function as a regulatory agency like the Securities and Exchange Commission is supposed to function, but in fact did not function in the Madoff case? It's not just an issue in this case. This is a broad issue throughout society, and we have this whole philosophical debate going on about the appropriate role of government and to what extent private market adds value to things and to what extent private market can get you into trouble and needs to be reined in. And the tradition in America has been to have countervailing power centers, to have checks
regulators.
And balances, regulators, and one interest checks another, because the human being hasn't been born that can be absolutely fair and courageous in all instances and do everything that has to be done. So the founders of the country said we were going to do that with checks and balances.
Well, let me turn to you, Dr. Ackerman, and I know because you want to bring more charters to Philadelphia, in part to deal with some of these failing schools, but does this report get you to rethink that idea?
No, I just think we have to make sure that the charter schools are in compliance, and I actually support the controllers and Senator Pakola's suggestion that and recommendation that the audits will be done by a neutral party. He's absolutely, Mr. Vukovic is absolutely correct that there are pressures on both sides. I've been in many, many SRC meetings, and you hear the pressure from both sides. Charters saying stay out of our way, and others saying you should do more. I really support a neutral party taking on that responsibility, and I think that there are, you know, many charter schools that have acted in accordance with all the rules and regulations, and those we just have to make sure that we select only those charter schools that have a proven track record for academic performance, but all of the other compliance issues are in order also.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Arlene Ackerman. She's the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia, a job she's had since June of 2008. Alan Butkovitz here with us in our Philadelphia studios. He is the City Controller General here in Philadelphia, a job he's had since 2005, and we are talking about a scathing report just released by the City Controller's Office. It takes a look at charter schools, 13 of some 63 charter schools in the city, finding problems at all of them and also raising questions about the school district's oversight of charter schools. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I'm curious, I'll put this first to you, Alan Butkovic, and then to you, Dr. Ackerman. But what you found in here are things like conflict of interest and questionable lease agreements and people getting triple salaries for work that they did at several different districts. What happens to this information? I mean, is it going to be business as usual after this report is put on the shelf? Well,
I doubt if it'll be business as usual. First of all, Senator Pakola indicated the other day he's going to scrap what he was going to do in terms of his charter overhaul legislation and focus entirely on accountability and oversight issues in the new legislation. I think that I take Superintendent Ackerman at her word that she is shocked and jolted by some of these findings, and that she will be kicking butts in the school district to get a stronger enforcement effort going over there. And I think it has been part of a conversation. It's been a major conversation in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, and it looks like throughout the educational community in the country as a result of this report. So,
But can you, Dr. Ackerman, intervene and actually prevent people from getting, say, you know, double dipping or triple dipping for salaries, or when there are questionable lease agreements? Do you have the authority to intervene right now and stop those practices?
Well, we certainly have the authority to do the audits, and to monitor what's going on and bring it to light as the controller's done. So I think that that's the first step. I do think some of this has to be, part of the new law. And as we speak with Senator Pakola, we are outlining some of the disciplinary measures that we think need to be in place in law so that we don't have to have this tug of war of who has authority, but it's stated clearly so that we can hold the charter schools accountable.
Let me get Gideon from, looks like Brewery Town, to join us on Radio Times. And Gideon, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, one aspect of regulation, I think, you know, something really needs to be done to look into how the teachers and employees are being treated. My girlfriend found herself in a situation about 2 years ago, hired by a charter school in West Philadelphia, where she signed a contract that said she was getting a certain base salary along with health benefits, and when she went back in to work, she was told she was in reality an hourly employee, no salary, no benefits, nothing. Turns out later on that school had apparently been under review, and they needed more teachers' assistants and teachers who had a master's degree as part of that review.
Hmm.
After that review, they were terminated.
Well, let me get to the question being, was she given, false information when she applied for this job or took this job, Gideon?
There was a posting on Craigslist. The posting itself said salary and health benefits.
Mm.
The interview reflected that, and there was a contract she signed. Sadly, she didn't take a copy of the contract with her, so miraculously, when she shows up at the office, the contract's not there.
Well, Gideon, let me see if Arlene Ackerman has a response to that. Dr. Ackerman?
Well, I think that those kinds of complaints need to come directly to the charter school office so that we can investigate and certainly find a way to address these kinds of issues as they happen. We need to put in place, again, certain protocols so that in numbers and names, directory assistance for employees of charter schools. We often get complaints from parents also, and they don't know what to do. We need to be a clearinghouse for those kinds of complaints so that we can help the individuals address their issues with the charter various or individual charter schools.
And Dr. Ackerman, we're going to have to say goodbye to you, but can you say that in 6 months this will be a very different relationship that the CSO has with charters in Philadelphia?
Absolutely. Not within 6 months. Today.
Today.
Starting today.
Well, I thank you for joining us today,
You're
Radio
welcome.
Times. And that's Dr. Arlene Ackerman. She's the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. And staying with us for the rest of the hour is Alan Butkovitz. He is the City Controller General here in Philadelphia, and that's a job he's had since 2005. And we invited him to join us to talk about this report released late last week. It took a look at charter schools in Philadelphia, finding all sorts of problems of conflict of interest and questionable salaries. And we are talking about that with him, and joining us in just a couple of minutes after this very short break is Guy Shiraki, and he's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Charter Schools. And we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Paoli Hospital Orthopedic Center supports WHYY. Paoli is the only hospital in Chester County designated as a Blue Distinction Center by Blue Cross Blue Shield for knee and hip replacement as well as spine surgery, and certified by the Joint Commission for Knee and Hip Replacement. Details about Paoli Hospital Orthopedic Center online at mainlinehealth.org/Paoli. More about Blue Distinction at bcbs.com.
In the next Fresh Air, Peter Wolf on his life and music career, including fronting the Jay Giles Band and getting to know some iconic blues musicians.
James Cotton would cook up all sorts of chicken, and Muddy would tell Howlin' Wolf, hey, you know, business young guy has an apartment, so he would come by. John Lee Hooker would come by and they would just all hang.
Wolf has a new solo CD. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Choice. It's part of everything we do.
Something like lunch, I tend to do the same thing every day of the week.
I just always smoke Carmel's.
I want to live in a quiet neighborhood.
The one that struck my fancy just happened to be a red one.
I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll talk with Sheena Iyengar, one of the world's top experts on choice. Her new book is The Art of Choosing. That's today at noon here on WHYY FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Last week, our guest, City Controller Alan Butkovitz, released a damning report about 13 charter schools here in Philadelphia. Just a recap, one school was operating a nightclub on the weekends. One business manager was triple dipping. The controller's office also found highly suspect leasing arrangements, numerous examples of conflicts of interest, rubber stamp boards, and very high salaries for CEOs. And the report also was very critical of the school district's charter school office, saying that they essentially were not providing the kind of oversight for these schools, creating the risk for things like fraud, waste, and abuse. And joining us now by telephone is Guy Shiraki. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Charter Schools. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. What's your response to this report? Very critical of a number of charter schools here in Philadelphia.
Well, I think the good news is that if any of your listeners were call or listening in thinking that there would be disagreement between the city controller and our organization, the Pennsylvania Coalition, they will find that there's very little disagreement. We found that many of the things that in his report are troubling. Some of them appear to be inappropriate, and certainly, if not inappropriate or violating the law, certainly violating the spirit of the law and not the reason charter schools were created. So to the extent that we can all work together to make sure that the law is clear, to make sure the law is understood and make sure the law is followed, we'll be very supportive of that. We, within our own organization, have a code of conduct, expect our members to follow that code of conduct and take it very seriously when they don't, above and beyond whatever the law may be. So I think you will find, as we look at what went wrong here, that we will try and work together to find out what was done that was wrong through negligence or malfeasance, but also if it was done through confusion, that we make sure the law is clearly understood so that members can comply, because the vast majority of members want to comply. And I think it's in everyone's interest that these schools run and run well, because there are not only across the state 70,000 children in charter schools, there are tens of thousands who are on waiting lists who would like to either attend these schools or other schools. So long term, it's in everyone's interest that we have a sound law, that it's followed, and that the children are ultimately being taken care of.
But as you say, your organization has a code of conduct. Why didn't you know about what was going on in the 13 charter schools here in Philadelphia? Some of it, you know, unbelievably egregious.
Sure. Our organization is not really that type of organization. It's more of a sharing of ideas and sharing of principles. In other words, we're not an investigative organization per se. It is much more of an organization the way that the any other trade group or membership group. I think it's important also to understand that charter schools are relatively new here in Pennsylvania. The longest existing ones are 13 years. Some are only a year or so old. So our organization's focus has been in sharing best practices, in helping these groups get started, and in getting them focused. If down the road we can do a better job of looking at what the controller has found and sharing it with our members, we will do that. I would add, too, that I think the controller, he certainly can speak for himself, but some of the issues raised in his report and some of the things that have been reported are issues where we would all like to see the law tightened. It's not clear that in some cases that any laws were broken. There may be, in fact, confusion on some of the members as to how best comply with the law. And that's why I think I come back to this. Where the law has been broken, where money or privilege has been abused, that needs to be addressed. But we really do need some clarity in the law, and I think the one area where the controller and I would agree is in this issue of how schools are constructed, physically built, and how they're operated so that the dollars and cents are accountable. We need some tightening of that law and some clarification so the schools can do it properly.
Alan Butkovitz, I mean, is this about tightening the law, or is it about people taking advantage of the laws and perhaps the loopholes that currently exist?
Well, I mean, actually, it's a complex of several factors. Guy is right that the construction and the leasing of properties pose a very sticky problem because the charters only exist for 5 years and nobody can get a mortgage for 5 years. So it necessitates the creation of these related organizations. Mm. And IRS has certain rules with regard to interrelationships, which actually complicate this. So I acknowledge that that's a problem, and that's why we've treaded relatively gently on the leasing issue, even though it looks to the untrained eye very suspicious.
Sure.
When people lease properties back and forth
to
themselves.
Each other.
But the rest of it, clearly there has, at least in Philadelphia, there's been this idea that nobody's watching. And our experience in government and actually in business is that when nobody's watching, these kinds of things occur. It's very akin, in my mind, to all the disclosures that happened in Wall Street in the last year.
But is it the state's responsibility? I mean, the state auditor to look at what's going on in Philly? We just said goodbye to Dr. Arlene Ackerman, the school superintendent. The school has some responsibility for what happens inside Philadelphia charter schools.
Well, that's kind of like a committee response. I mean, if several people see somebody getting mugged, the chance that anybody's going to interfere is less than if one person has to step forward. The Auditor General has the authority to audit, but it is not one of their principal missions, and they don't have the money. They didn't get the money in their budget to take on this vastly increased responsibility. So if the legislature is serious about housing it in the Auditor General, they're going to have to give him the money to actually do it, just like he does with the school district audits.
Let me turn to you, Guy Shiraki, but does this hurt the charter school movement? I mean, this is an investigation here in Philadelphia, but it's gotten national response and attention. And I wonder, even as Philadelphia, other states and cities, and even the Obama administration talks more about charter schools. Does this hurt the movement?
I hope it doesn't, because the vast majority of schools are performing well academically. The Inquirer in the Philadelphia area has been doing its annual report cards and has now expanded that to, you saw, many of your listeners may have seen this past weekend. They did a report on the sciences and how they're taken care of in schools in the Delaware Valley. You'll find that many of the charter schools rank, if not consistent with public schools, in some cases above the public school districts where they're in. So I hope it doesn't hurt, and I think that reasonable people will see that the vast majority of schools are doing two things. They're helping students achieve academically, and secondly, they're run well. Where they're not run well, where that's not being done well because of bad intentions, criminality, or abuse, that has to be taken care of. Where the law needs to be fixed, because it's a relatively new law and there's confusion, we stand with the controller and Senators Pakola and Dinneman, who chair the Education Committee, who want to tighten up the rules, and we're with them. So I hope it doesn't. As I said before, there are 70,000 children across Pennsylvania in charter schools. Just to give everyone listening a perspective, if charter schools were a school district, it would be the second largest school district in the state. Mm. So there's a lot of children being educated. We need to tighten up the laws and clarify them for their interest. And there are tens of thousands who are on waiting lists where there's clearly interest among parents or guardians watching these children. So it's in everybody's interest that this idea of charter schools, that it exists and that it run well academically and that the finances are taken care of. And that's why we're so committed not only in defending the schools that are doing well, but in making sure the law is here to stay and that the schools are here to stay.
But how does anybody know that this isn't happening in other districts, considering this is probably the most in-depth investigation in the country?
Well, the reality is that in most districts, the relationship is different. I think part of the problem in Philadelphia, and the superintendent talked about it, is that almost 50% of all the charters in Pennsylvania are in the city of Philadelphia, right. And it's happening very quickly. And again, it's sort of a good news, bad news. The good news is there's an interest in running these schools. The good news is there's a lot of children whose parents want to send them to these schools. The reality is perhaps they grew too fast in Philadelphia for the district to be able to keep up. Again, that's not to excuse an individual person who runs a school, who uses it as a way to make money or to abuse the system. The fact that nobody was watching is not an excuse. But I do think in Philadelphia, they need additional resources. And our organization has talked about two things. One, a code of conduct and ethics training at the state level for all schools. But in Philadelphia, we think there needs to be an office charged with overseeing charter schools that reports directly to the SRC so that we don't have this kind of problem where things slip between the cracks in Philadelphia, where there's clearly a need.
Do you want to add to that, Alan Bukovitz, and then we'll get back to our callers?
No, I think Guy's on track with that.
But you would like your office
Certainly to we would be willing to do that, and this is a debate that constantly goes on. The reason for an independent auditor is that you just answer to the voters. Ultimately, instead of being subject to all sorts of intermediate bureaucratic pressures, we don't have to worry about getting our contract renewed. We don't have to negotiate our findings with the auditee. Our people are very aggressive and very complete, as evidenced by the fact that in this report, there hasn't been any factual rebuttals or specific rebuttals to any of the findings. So I think that we are well positioned to provide this service in Philadelphia.
Let me get Mike from Spring City to join our conversation. And Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi
the
there.
Point I wanted to make is that in the private sector, there are many unethical things that we don't make illegal or that aren't illegal. And I wanted to ask both your guests why we should be surprised that when charter schools and their boards of directors and they have unethical conduct, why we should be surprised, because basically they're mirroring a lot of what we see in the private sector.
Mike, let me toss that to Guy Shiraki.
Mike, I mean, I think you raise a point, and that is, look, in any organization, whether it's basketball umpires or referees or any other institution, are there bad actors or people that take advantage of the system? Yes. But I don't think, again, in any organization that you excuse that simply saying, well, there are people who will take advantage of a system. Which is why I think, particularly with this, I think why it's so egregious here is that because ultimately this is about education, and if at Citibank or some other entity the officers take advantage of the shareholders, it's a societal interest, but it's up to the shareholders. This is a case where there's public dollars and public schools involved, and it is a problem that's in everyone's interest. So I don't think we can just say, well, it happens, it's part of the system. I understand your point. That's why we're interested in if there is malfeasance done, for it to be taken care of. But where there's vagaries in the law, let's get them clarified. Let's make sure there's proper training for officers, proper training for board members, so the laws can be followed, dollars can be taken care of, and we get back to the business of education for the people who are genuinely interested to be in the business of education.
And we're talking, Alan, about 25% of the charters in Philadelphia that you
were among the 13. I think you're talking about two sides of the coin here. The very same creativity that has unleashed in the private market that creates all these jobs and opportunities also has a flip side. Even when they're functioning the way they think they should be functioning in a capitalistic system, they are trying to maximize profit. So the principles involved and what people are trying to do are different in a public system and a private system. We've tried to merge here the best creativity of the private system in the educational field, and yet it's not something to be taken care of by shareholders or by customers. It's a subsidized business. They are processing.
Subsidized by taxpayers.
Yeah, they're using tax dollars to provide this business service. And therefore, it should closely resemble the public system for accountability and checks and balances and audits and reviews, because it's essentially they're just managing public money.
But are you saying that there's sort of a built-in conflict here because we're talking about public money and the private sector?
There's a different philosophical and intellectual impetus in the private market than there is in the public sector. The private market, what is considered good, it tends to maximize the profit-making motive.
Right.
And when you're dealing with public money, that needs to be checked because it's not all about profit making. It's about what is the service that is being provided. Is the public? You can't always make money at everything that is a productive social goal. And secondly, the public sector doesn't regard it as a dollar for dollar reward for productivity. There are limits on it. You know, one of the things that has to be curbed here is the entitlement idea. I've heard some charter operators argue that because we are exceeding AYP, making good progress, therefore we are entitled to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that's an argument that really doesn't have any resonance or any place in this particular debate, because they're doing it with tax dollars. They're not building their own market.
And this is a philosophical discussion. And Guy Shiraki, we're almost out of time here, but I'd just like to get your response to that about reconciling the public-private nature of charter schools.
Well, I think we can, again, with proper training, proper understanding of the law, the vast, vast majority, you know, 95, 99, and hopefully 100% of the schools will follow it. I think we shouldn't forget, as has been alluded to, but I think I need to state it clearly, starting a charter school out of whole cloth takes a lot of talent and dedication and some risk-taking so that it is like an enterprise. You're starting it sometimes without a building, without a certain stream of funding, and without any certainty that students are going to show up. So the men and women, particularly who start these schools from scratch, are in most cases to be admired and appreciated because they are taking a risk. They go through all the steps necessary to start up a school from scratch, to apply for funding, to get started, and then are given a five-year charter. So the people there, whether they're the principal, the CEO, or a math teacher, that person knows that there's a chance they may only have their job for 5 years. They are, in a sense, risk takers who are truly committed to taking on a group of students who haven't had the ability to succeed. So it is for those people who are taking risks for the right reasons, and those parents who are going to these new schools in the hope that it's where their child will succeed, that we need the good schools to be protected and defended, right, and the bad ones to be weeded out.
And we got to end on that note. And Guy Shiraki, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And he's the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Charter Schools. And Alan Bukovitz, thank you very much for joining us as well. He's a Philadelphia City Controller. That's it for today's edition of Radio Times. And Bob Purdick has been our engineer, and the program is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. For more information about Radio Times, go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can leave us an email. You can find out about podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook, and you can certainly follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia and WHYY.org, member-supported public media.